Friday Sport.
First of my good evening, football, swimming, cycling, gymnastics and motorsport all to come on Friday Sport this evening. We hear from the Mepster live as the Isle of Man prepare to take on Flint Town tonight, and we find out what's in store for those who attend this year's Sport Coaching Festival with a packed schedule for the September event. Plus, earlier today, Michael Dunlop once again proved he's superhuman. So much to cover, as always, in Friday Sport this evening. Fastermy, good evening. I'm Chris Cave. I'm with you until 6 o'clock, but we start tonight with gymnastics because more than 100 are taking part from 8 island nations in the Inter-Island Games competition, which began yesterday. It's being hosted at the Ellen Vanin Gymnastics Club in Douglas until tomorrow. So a training day today. Tomorrow, the competition resumes. It's after the sport was omitted from the official island games schedule at the recent Island Games event in Gibraltar. Visiting athletes from Åland, Cayman Islands, Gotland, Guernsey, Jersey, Shetland and Innismon will join our Manx counterparts as they battle it out for medals. Isabel Hester has competed for the Isle of Man on a number of occasions and currently represents Loughborough University. She says the Manx athletes have an illustrious history in the sport and is confident they'll continue that this year.
Obviously the Island Games was quite a big deal for the Isle of Man, and I remember for me it was very exciting in the run-up to it because it's quite a high level, but it is annoying when it doesn't get picked for the real Island Games, but having it on the Isle of Man creates a big recognition for the sport, and it's almost good in a way to, you know, create more for the sport on the Isle of Man, yeah.
And as a sport, is it thriving? Are there a lot of people participating in gymnastics on the Isle of Man as it stands?
Yeah, so there are actually, as a country, we have a lot of gymnasts, actually. So a lot of them also go on to compete at university at Loughborough. 3 of the 4 girls there are from the Isle of Man, so we help bring up the girls in the Isle of Man to compete at a high level, even off the Isle of Man as well.
It seems as if we're bringing through gymnasts at quite a high standard as well. The number of Manx gymnasts we've seen go on to big stages and do the business is quite incredible. Tell us about the team from the Isle of Man who are competing here for this Inter-Island Games competition.
Yeah, so we've got 2 teams. There's an older team and a younger team. There's a mixed level of experience on the team. We've got Tara Donnelly, who's done as high levels as the World Championships. We've also got some new girls coming up. It'll be their first Island Games. So a real range of gymnasts there. But as I say, they all help each other at different levels. And as a team, they'll compete really well together.
Speaking to many of the athletes who are heading to Gibraltar for the Island Games, a lot of them said their targets were just to achieve personal bests. The medals, if they were to accrue them, were just a bonus. Is that the same here for the gymnasts, or is there a medal target? Is there a specific target that we want to achieve?
Well, we do have a good record of winning the Island Games for gymnastics, so hopefully, fingers crossed, if they perform well, I think they're in for a chance of winning the gold. And in terms of individual medals, they all have different strengths, so I would think we have quite a good shot at the medals if it all goes well.
What does it mean for them to represent the Isle of Man, not Great Britain, the Isle of Man?
Well, certainly from my experience, it's such great experience, like competing for your country. The Isle of Man has many benefits in which we can do these bigger competitions, and it makes you feel like you can go on to do bigger things because you're competing at such a high level for your island rather than Great Britain as such.
How excited are you personally to have this event here on the Isle of Man? It could have been on one of the other islands who are participating here over the 3 days, but it's here in the Isle of Man. How exciting is that for you personally?
Yeah, so no, I think that's absolutely great. As I said, it creates great recognition for the sport, and yeah, such a good crowd behind us here and so many good gymnasts coming up. I mean, especially for the younger ones, it'll be good to see it hosted here, so to inspire the next generation.
That was Isabel Hester. That's the Inter-Island Games gymnastics competition. It's taking place. It was a 3-day event. It started yesterday. That was the first competition day. Today was a training day. The competition resumes tomorrow. But the Isle of Man have been doing very, very well so far. Chloe McKenzie from the Isle of Man, she placed first in the bars. Georgia Price for the Isle of Man, she was first on the vault. And that was the junior Isle of Man team in the girls. They picked up a gold medal. And in the men's, they're doing very well as well. Nick Harvey from the Isle of Man in the first vault, he got a gold and a silver in the floor. And just In general, it is a fantastic event to be part of. Whether it's at the opening ceremony on Wednesday night, there's plenty of people down there. It's a real buzz, a real vibrant atmosphere there. So if you do get a chance to possibly get along to that event, although I know that it is very, very busy so far, but we'll be keeping you up to date with the results from that Inter-Island Games gymnastics competition. Now, earlier today, this man who continues to surpass expectations was at it again just 2 weeks after suffering a heavy crash at the Southern 100. Michael Dunlop has finished fourth in Superbike qualifying at Armoy. Quite incredible. He's a 19-time TT winner. You probably don't need me to mention that because you already know, but he was only 3.17 seconds off leader Derek Shields, despite carrying multiple injuries, including a broken pelvis. Derek McGee placed second, and Irishman Michael Sweeney rounded off the top three in the qualifying, and Dunlop was also among the quickest in the Supersport qualifying, ending up in fifth on his MD Racing Honda. And it's quite fitting then that this evening, a film taking a look into the minds of some of the world's best motorcyclists is being screened on the island.
Hell, we all know that every time we put a helmet on, that might be the last time.
But it's a will and a drive that you cannot suppress.
Speed is My Need is the title. It takes a psychological look at why people choose to race motorbikes and risk everything for the thrill of speed. Filmed in a cinematic style, it revolves around last year's British Superbike Championship and the Isle of Man TT races, and is set to be shown on Netflix as well as the Broadway cinema here in the Isle of Man. Among other well-known names in the motorsport world, the film features interviews with the all-time fastest TT winner Peter Hickman, and also Freddie Spencer and Colin Edwards, who director Mark Sloper spent time with in America to see how racers cope with retirement. Mr. Sloper told Rianne Evans he hopes the film can appeal to people outside of the motorsport world as well.
I made the film and it took me 2 years to make it, but when I'm sat in a cinema, I'm just totally riveted by it. I mean, it's just, there's some really intense moments in it, and there's some really, really good explanations as to why the guys go racing, not just in the British Superbikes, but on the Isle of Man and generally on the world and MotoGP level. So there's a No, anyone that likes motorcycle racing will enjoy the film.
Do you think that, I know it's targeted at quite a niche audience, but do you think the psychological aspect of it could appeal to more people outside of the motorsport world?
The whole plan of the movie is to make it more accessible to more people. And the reason I've got quite an American slant on it is that I've been able to sort of pre-sell the film into Netflix. So the film is going to go around the world to lots of territories, and you know, hopefully it'll bring the Isle of Man to people's attention. It'll bring the British Superbikes to people's attention. And it'll also tell you, you know, what these riders do after racing. It's just, it's a really nice balanced overall look at the reasons for motorcycle racing.
Do you have a particularly challenging or memorable moment from during production?
Yeah, actually it was on the Isle of Man because, you know, it's not a place I'm familiar with. I made a TV series there for ITV about 15 years ago when David Cretney was in charge, the Minister for Fun. Mm-hmm. And he allowed me to make a TV series. And I've revisited the island. And I do have an uncle that lives on the island called Barry Sloper. That's an ex-sidecar racer. So I'm pretty familiar with, you know, where to be and what to do. But I was just so scared for Peter Hickman because he was really on it and he was getting these fantastic times. And I stood on the sort of, you know, on the grandstand just before he took off. And I don't think I've ever been so nervous. You know, I was like, oh, there's my mate going round. And, you know, and he came home triumphant and got the fastest ever time around the island. And, you know, I think we all had a little tear, actually.
That's Speed Is My Need, a new film taking a look into the minds of some of the world's best motorcyclists, screening in the Isle of Man for a week at the Broadway cinema from today. Let's talk football now.
Friday Sport.
Because Cymru Northside Flint Town United are the latest side to test the Isle of Man senior men's football team. The pair go head-to-head at the bowl twice in as many days, starting with a 7:30 kick-off this evening. A second friendly is also set to take place tomorrow afternoon, a 2:30 kick-off, and that's a week on from the Manx team's 1-0 triumph over Widnes. Well, Mr. President of the Isle of Man Football Association and Manx Radio's football correspondent Tony Meppham joins us on the line now. Good evening, Tony. Are the young players, do you think, in the forefront of the mind of Paul Jones when it comes to his approach for these matches? Obviously Widnes last week and then again Flint Town this evening.
I would say so, Chris, after
last week's second half performance because Paul threw them on. He knew what to expect because they're good players, and it was just to see how they could cope with the intensity and also the physicality, because it's all a learning curve for them. And when you look at Sid Batthews playing his trade in Myersko College across in UK, got the all-important goal. But also, when you look at 16-year-old Sam Baines, what did he turn 16? Something like March, April. So, you know, fantastic occasion for him and his family. And then when you look at other people who are really playing well at the moment, Jacob Krook, you've also got other ones who have come into the squad. And I think Paul, Chris, has got a massive problem now, because some of these young players are playing way above what I thought he expected, and Lee Dixon as well. And it's given him selection problems for games. But it's a good opportunity tonight to put a team out against a fresh Flint Town side. And then tomorrow they'll play against the same team, obviously a little bit more fatigued, so Paul can put a second lot of players out against them. So great game and prospect for all the Ireland players. And let's just hope we get a good crowd, and the weather conditions are superb.
A bit of a problem for manager Paul Jones, you say. A nice problem to have for him. What did you make of the performance against Widnes last week? I mean, it's a tight game, and with only, as you mentioned him there, a Sid Batty strike separating the sides.
Yeah, I think we just lacked a little bit of opportunity up front. We had chances, but it didn't quite sort of go for us. But, you know, collectively, the team played really well. You couldn't say that a player played below par. So that was good to see, because everyone is working so hard to stay in the squad, because it's a big, big squad. And I think certainly with one or two players sort of possibly back from injury. I don't think Jack McVeigh's ready yet, but one or two others hopefully will be included in the starting lineups over the next couple of games. But it's great to have this continuity of games for Paul, because it's on the back of Innes Mahon, and that was something that the Widnes manager pointed out, was he could see that they were game savvy. They moved straight into the game right from the start, as where they're still trying to find their legs. But take nothing away from it. The Ireland team at the moment are playing really well, and it bodes well for the 28th of September when they play in the Interleague. And that's all so important for them, because that leads on to so much. That could be, what, five or six games to get through to the final. And then if they win that final, then they can move into the regions, which is sort of a dream for everyone to play in, because it's probably the biggest set of games that our Ireland players can play in at the moment.
We hear a lot about this preparation for the Interleague Cup. How close are the likes of Widnes and Flint Town to the standard that the Isle of Man team will be facing in this competition?
Well, I think Widnes last week is probably on par with what we play, but certainly Widnes last week got a shock of how good we are. We're super fit. There's a game plan there. It's not just getting 11 or 16 players out there and saying, right, this is what we'll go for. That's all sorted before kickoff, and they're quick to react, Steve Burns, Lee Dixon, and also Paul Jones, to, you know, any sort of good points they see from the opposition. They'll try and nullify that very, very quickly, and it certainly is a good opportunity for him, I think, to see where his younger players are, bring them in, and also not necessarily younger players, some players who have been given the opportunity to come in and stake their claim for a position, because the Interleague is so, so important, I think, for Manx football, because if you go out of it, it's 2 years before you're playing it again. So they've got to concentrate straight from the start. And I'm pretty certain with the players that Paul's got available to him at the moment, they'll do a job tonight and tomorrow.
Well, it's been a glorious couple of days weather-wise, Tony. And are you confident that the Isle of Man side will raise their game if there's a big crowd out there at the ball tonight?
Very much so. The crowd is always a guessing point, because for some reason they're reluctant at times to come down. I don't know why, because I know... you know, sometimes in the league season, the opportunity that they might have to have a Saturday afternoon off or something, they take that and don't watch the Ireland play. But here we are, Friday night. The season's not too far away, what, just over a month. And it's a good opportunity just to see where the Ireland team, the players and everything else is at the moment. So all I can say is anyone who's looking for something to fill their Friday evening, head yourself down to the bowl, 7:30 kickoff, great venue, and watch a game of football and then go and have a beer afterwards.
Mr. President, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you tomorrow ahead of the 2:30 kickoff for the Isle of Man against the same opposition, that's Cymru North side at Flint Town United. But Tony, thanks very much. Now, workshops, lectures and discussion groups are all planned for this year's Sport Coaching Festival, which takes place in September. People from all sports being encouraged to attend at least some of the three-day events, pick up some helpful tips and to improve your coaching. Trevor Christian is the man behind the event. He's arranged for a number of well-respected and high-profile figures to visit the island and ensure the festival piques interest in a wide audience. I went along to speak to him earlier this week to find out what he's got in store for us.
We had our first festival last year and it went really well. We sold out and I'm really excited to put on the 2019 edition and make it even bigger and better.
A jam-packed schedule. Who have you got coming over this year?
Oh, we've got some real top draw people from the world of coaching, Chris. First and foremost, we've got a guy called John Mills. John was involved with British Cycling as director of coaching for probably going on for 20 years. And he's going to be delivering quite a few workshops for us. We always like to put certificated workshops on. And this year we're doing some UK coaching workshops, including coaching the person in front of you. So thinking about what sort of considerations you might need to make sure that each different individual and all of their individual needs are met in that coaching session. So John's got a lot of experience as a tutor for UK coaching, so he's going to really bring some great things to that workshop. He's also going to do another workshop for us as well, so that first one's on Friday night. Saturday, John's going to go through how to work with young people. So Saturday afternoon is going to be basically aimed at working with 5 to 12-year-olds and how can we work with that next generation of sports people to make sure they're really enthused, to make sure we're thinking about how we can produce sessions that fit in with how their brains are working at that age as well. So I'm really excited to see what John's going to bring to the festival.
It is intriguing because I think young people are more receptive to coaching methods, but they don't always behave in a way that you'd want as a coach. So, and do you get a lot of interaction between those who are attending the workshop and the guest speakers?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, because the guest speakers, they're really accessible. They come from coaching backgrounds themselves. So they've got a lot of information and experiences that they can share with our coaches. And in the world of coaching, you'll often find it's just like it's a real good community of people who are like-minded, who want to see people do better. So absolutely.
And as we say, this isn't for one specific sport. This is for any coaches out there, whatever sport and whatever age range you do coach. How has this year's lineup been formed around the feedback that you got from last year's festival?
We always look for feedback, and we did do a Survey Monkey last year, and I think people are generally looking for workshops with a practical element, workshops where they can see best practice and action. So hoping to use some workshops, we're using some players from different teams this year to articulate some of the processes and some of the principles that the speakers are going to talk about. And I think that's really important. If we don't take feedback, then we're going to be lost and we're not going to meet the needs of that coaches have on the Isle of Man.
And I know there's a really good network of coaches that you go for breakfasts with to discuss ideas, methods and problems that you need overcoming, and the different sports coaches chip in with their ideas. Have we heard of how successful the implementation of the methods that they took on board last year have been?
Yes, I mean, it's hard to really measure, if I'm honest, Chris. But as I say, from talking with the coaches who attend a lot of the breakfast clubs and the feedback I get from them, they find it very valuable. And they do often share a lot of these experiences and use the wider networks that they create. I know Heather from swimming in particular has done a lot of work now linking with Ramsey Rugby Club and have provided pool-based sessions for the players, which has really helped to re-engage quite a lot of players who perhaps might be injured and you can't get back into training on the pitch because it's a little bit too high impact. So you know, this, it's great to see real things happening as a result of some of those meetings and those breakfast clubs.
And the Isle of Man Sport Coaching Festival for 2019 takes place from the 6th to the 8th of September. You can find out more about that event on the Isle of Man Sport Facebook page. And he talked of Heather from swimming, picking up a lot of methods and helpful tips there, did Trevor Christian. And we move on to swimming now, because there has been plenty of coverage about the NSC pool reopening next month, but no foreseeable date for the slides and the leisure facility being in use. It's an inconvenience to the public, isn't it? But greater frustration for the national swimming team, consistently delivering in competitions. They added 24 medals in the recent Island Games in Gibraltar. 13 of those were golds, 8 silvers and 3 bronze medals, both individually and in their respective relay teams. It was a brilliant week in Gibraltar for the swimmers. But how did the pool closure affect the team's preparation, and what has it meant for the development of swimmers over here? Tim Glover has been speaking to Head of Sport and Recreation on the Isle of Man, Paul Brideson.
The National Sports Centre is one pool that the Isle of Man Swimming Squad use. They also use the other swimming pools because, of course, their participants that make up that squad live all around the island. So if they only ever train in Douglas, you've got to think about the young people who live in the other parts of the island. So, and I believe it's the right thing to do, is that they have training sessions ordinarily when the NSC pool has been open at all of those regional swimming pools, as well as the National Sports Centre. So in that respect, they were able to find additional space that where they would have been in the NSC at one or two of the regional pools, to ensure they still had this kind of same, as close to the same level as provision as possible. Just to kind of extend to that question, when the department was discussing and considering when the pool was going to close for this refurbishment, we looked at all the different key user groups of the pool. And a key user group was the swimming association, the Isle of Man Swimming Association, and indeed their talented and elite swimmers. And the reason why we actually delayed part of this project and did it at a slightly later date than we discussed was because the Commonwealth Games were going to take place, and we didn't want to close prior to the Commonwealth Games. So because of the nature and the extent of the refurbishment, we always knew it was going to be many, many months. There was never going to be an ideal time. But I'd like to think we took into account their wishes, mm-hmm. and their priorities, which was the Commonwealth Games. Clearly, we then had to close at some point between an Island Games, which is obviously every 2 years, so that preparation was never going to be ideal. But I hope, and I think, you know, and congratulations to the swimmers and the Isle of Man Swimming Association for the number of medals that they've won out in Gibraltar. It would appear to me that they've continued the great success they've had over the last several Island Games, and I didn't see too much of a drop off. In fact, if any drop off, I kept reading about new personal bests, new Manx records, more and more gold medals.
13 of them in total. That was Paul Brideson, the Head of Sport and Recreation on the Isle of Man, on the news that the swimming pool will reopen next month, but there's no foreseeable date for the slides and the leisure facility being in use. And now another sport that did very, very well in the Island Games was cycling. And sticking with cycling, last weekend, Nathan Draper was crowned the winner of Gran Fondo Isle of Man. He took the title ahead of Liverpool's Philip Williams, with Cal Crutchlow in third. Sally Walker won the ladies' class ahead of Anki Itsmar and Jessie Carriage. Walker also won the Queen of the Mountain prize, and I caught up with her after the race. Queen of the Mountain and the overall women's winner. This day couldn't have gone any better for you, really, could it?
I know, I'm delighted, yeah. It's third time I've done it, so third time lucky.
Talk us through your preparation. How do you familiarise yourself with the route that you have to take on, and how many hours of training do you do for this event?
The other girls probably quite jealous of this, because I don't. I do a lot of training, probably about 11 hours a week running up to it, and do lots of hills and things like that. Prefer the hills and the flats, so it's my type of thing.
How did the conditions affect your performance today? Because we know it is very blustery. It's been a bit wet and misty on the hilltops as well. You prefer the climbs, as your Queen of the Mountain title suggests. Do you think that actually benefited you and was a disadvantage to the others?
Probably, yeah. I knew what was coming ahead. I was dreading Ingebrek, but today was probably the best I've ever been up there with the tailwind coming up. The only time I found it really hard was coming up, is it towards Benny Pot, where I expected it to be a tailwind, but it was actually a headwind, yeah.
Only a couple of minutes in it between you and second place
Anki Itzmaar from the Netherlands. Were you aware of how close it was out there?
I didn't know we were catching it until I saw her on the Hope. And then she kept catching me up every time we went downhill. She'd re-catch me back up. But I knew once I got to Injabrek and turned around, there's a bit at the top where you can see if people are coming towards you, that I knew that I probably had it then. Yeah.
85 miles, it's a heck of a course. I know the organisers put so much hard work into making it as varying and as challenging as they possibly can. Where did you find the toughest sections of the course today?
I was very worried about going through the off-road bit, so through the Coric, because I was very worried about, struggled with that, and I struggled going through the bit in South Briel, the off-road bit there, and down Starvey, that bit there was a bit rough, but everything else was it's fine. And the start, I get a bit nerves at the start. Yeah.
Well, you seem to handle the nerves quite well, because you stood here not only Queen of the Mountain but also in the pink jersey as well. What's that like for you?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, I know. I'm going to retire now. Now I've done that.
How is the body feeling?
I'm okay now. I was very shaky when I came in, but I feel okay now. Yeah.
You said you're going to retire. Will you be back again if the event's on next year?
I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows? That's all ancient history now, though. A whole week ago, that was in very different conditions to what we're experiencing today. Corin Leeming won the under-21s event with Will Draper and Jimmy Bostock second and third, respectively. Mark Christian was king of the mountain, and the veterans' prize went to Gary Johnson. So much to fit into only a half an hour slot. We do our best. That is it for Friday Sport this evening. Paul Corkish is up next after the news at 6 o'clock.